Welcome to the Vince Del Monte Podcast Show, where each week we bring you the raw and real experiences, lessons, and timeless principles every man needs to master the 5 M's of manhood. By sharing conversations with the world's most successful people pursuing the 5 M's, you'll build muscle faster, achieve a winner's mindset, increase your money, dominate your mission, and go the distance with your marriage. My name is Vince Del Monte, entrepreneur, author, pro fitness model, and father. And I've helped tens of thousands of men transform their bodies and lives through muscle, entrepreneurship, and personal development. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Now let's begin. Hey, 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 welcome back everybody to the Vince Del Monte podcast. This is going to be a super action-packed episode. I'm really excited here to be on the phone, I think for the second time in my life with this individual, although I feel like I spent a lot more time with him because he's in my ear when I train with his epic podcast, which feels like being in a high-level $100,000 mastermind for 15 to 20 minutes at a time, which is more than enough because it's like this guy... no fluff, no nonsense, just really action-packed insights from running from what you shared recently, multi eight-figure business. I've got so many questions. This gentleman spent 2 hours of his time with me a couple months ago, just shooting the breeze and just really helping me see things differently and implementing differently with thought and action that has made a big difference in our organization to the point we've 3X'd in the last year, 2X'd in the last few months. And it's been exciting. So I want to welcome somebody. I hope if you don't know, you're not going to want to go anywhere. His name is Alex Hormozi.
Man, with that intro, I really hope I can deliver.
I'm not going to do any of the, hey, share this, tag this, because people are going to do it automatically because I know this is going to be awesome. But hey, man, I've been wondering how you've been doing, being the head of the face, you and your wife, of Gym Launch and helping people scale their gym organization. And man, I'm like, I wonder how Alex is doing right now and just where are we at right now with the industry and what's it been like the last 4 months? Let's just jump in there.
Man, there's a lot because I feel like, I don't know how, if it felt the same way for you and your business, like the last, since COVID hit and whatnot, it's been, I feel like everything changes every like month. I feel like at least in the industry, it's just like, all right, we're opening back up. No, we're not opening back up. Now we're opening up in select states. Just kidding. Now we're not. It's just this constant back and forth. And so we're trying to optimize around circumstances that are changing, variable. And one of the things that for us we focused on is trying to just meet gyms where they're at, right? So if they're currently 100% closed, then we're showing them how to go online. If they're in between opening and close, they have limited capacity, then we're trying to meet them in a hybrid facility, which luckily we'd already created the entire program for that a year earlier in preparation for something like this. And then on the third example is of people who, there are some states that are allowed to be relatively open. They still have their mask requirements, but they don't have any strict capacity rules and things like that. And so the industry is super fragmented right now. As a result of that, all of our courses are much more matched to what they're doing, which makes it much more difficult on us as a company. Because normally I like to have one play, one way. This is how you do it. Because that way we can just get the most people to the finish line as possible. Because whenever someone has to make choices, then they usually get paralyzed because they're afraid of making the wrong call, right? And it's been very eye-opening, but for us, we've been trying to just stick with the fundamentals of what we know. This is practices that we used in the gym have worked for online. The biggest limiter for gyms who are trying to go online is their ability to sell in a low-trust environment. And so teaching them to do that has been probably our biggest, that's probably our biggest bottleneck or struggle. It's if you can close over the phone, then you can make as much money as you want online. And what we've had to also face is that we've probably had, I'd say a third to half of our seven-figure gyms who had already crossed the seven-figure mark actually permanently closed because they were good enough at sales that they actually just went online and are making more money now than they were in person. And so I think there's some degree of kind of evolution. If you have the ability to close and you know how to sell, and as soon as we showed them how they can break free of their 7-mile radius, they were like, dude, I can sign up members for 1/3 the cost I could before. They're paying the same amount. And like, why would I go back? I don't have a limit. I don't have to teach sessions anymore or pay people to teach sessions. I have to rent and overhead. And so there's guys who have switched 100% to that model. The people who are the most stable in our community are the guys who went all in on the hybrid model a year before COVID, which I made a lot of really strong public statements about having a hybrid facility. I had a lot of gurus take strong aim against that position before COVID happened. It was very satisfying. If I could do it all over again, I would have preferred to have been wrong, to be honest. That does not happen. But it was somewhat confirming to have all those guys, because they already had the infrastructure and they already had all the fulfillment built out. And so they just transitioned seamlessly and lost almost no customers, actually increased their profit. The guys who had the hardest shift were the ones who were 100% in person, never confronted the fact that this was going to be longer than a few weeks, held out for a few months, lost clients during that period of time, had hope when it was supposed to open back up at 50%, 60% capacity, which if you know anything about the gym industry, like you don't run 100% margins, right? And so if you're at 60% capacity, you could be 10% in the red. There's fixed costs that are associated with the business. Mm-hmm. And then they get shut down again. And those are the guys who really struggled, but some of them have been able to make it through now that they are able to be back open and actually follow the exact same gym launch model that we've been doing for 3.5 years.
Got it. So you have like essentially two groups, people going online or purely online and people that do want to continue on with their brick and mortar.
Yeah. And we're specifically gym owners going online. Like we don't really serve personal trainers. It's just like, we know who our avatar is. Like we work with gym owners and we're very loyal to that avatar. And so we know that somebody who's a gym owner has a certain level of skill set, certain level of investment. And we know that with their current level of infrastructure, which might be 1 to 3 employees, sometimes 5 employees that they have on staff, we can very quickly use that, wrap a new model on top of it, and then they can win.
Let's talk about that for a second. What do you find is, because we've noticed that as well, like it's very hard for a gym floor trainer to come into the online world, because to be a gym floor trainer, you're conditioned to get a certification, which teaches you to sell to mom, dad, bodybuilders, cheerleaders, etc. But online, so you got these gym floor trainers trying to come online and they're customizing every program for every type of person, which is chaos, and you can't scale chaos. Online, you've got to create one type of program and customize it for one type of person, which requires you to become an expert and tell a story about your transformation and attract one type of person. What do you find? That's what I find is the biggest belief I have to compel trainers to. Don't believe this. None of the stuff we give you is going to work, because you have to. What are you finding is the gaps? Like, why are people having a hard time going online right now?
I would have pinpointed different things, but that's obviously just from the lens that I see. I just look at skills. I just don't think most trainers, so there's 3 things that I think happen in succession as people walk in the entrepreneurial journey. First, you have to develop skills, then you have to develop character traits, and then you have to break beliefs. And then it starts over again at another level. You have to divide, I'll give you a simple example. Like first you have to learn how to sell, right? If you don't know how to sell, you're not gonna make money, period. It's not gonna happen, especially in the fitness space, which is a very sales heavy space. You have to learn how to sell. And then after that, you need to have the character traits to be able to focus, persevere, have patience, and continue to work and stick with something. Most trainers want to have the quick fix, want to have this one thing that's going to immediately make them money. And that's just not the reality for most people. Now, if you've acquired, let's say, I have this great visual that shows this, but like marketing, and I'll get to the other 2 in a second, but I think this is just, it's valuable. If there's a bridge between where you're at and where you want to go, and there's this big gap, right, between them, and the bridge is made of individual bricks. And that, let's say that overarching bridge is called marketing. People are like, I want to learn how to market. But no one actually learns. Marketing is an umbrella term for lots of subset skills, right? So understanding the semantics of what it even means is important, because then you can actually peel it apart and actually make it into actionable chunks. You need to learn how to write copy, learn how to write headlines. You need to learn how to find images and videos that are compelling and will get an emotion out of somebody who's a prospective customer. You need to know how to pick your customer avatar so you can write to that specific type of person. You need to learn how to place advertisements. So buy media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, whatever. You need to learn how to get clicks and measure click-through rates, how to get conversions on a landing page, build a landing page, which again has headlines, copy, bullets, opt-in pages, et cetera. And then how to set up a funnel structure overall so that you can, you know, get people on the phone who are qualified for your specific program. And then that's just like each one of those individual things, copy, creative, headlines, media placements, funnel building, landing page optimization, all of those things, you know, how to build a scheduler, how to build a follow-up campaign, like all of those things. You may buy a course on copy and then be upset that you do not now make money. But it's not because the copy course in some way wasn't good. It was because it was just one brick across the gap to get to where you want to go. And unfortunately, you have to have every single brick for the first dollar to come across. But once your first dollar from paid advertising comes across, the second comes immediately after. And so that's where I think people mistake the fact that they haven't made a dollar from not making progress. And I think that if people can shift that fundamental viewpoint, especially if you're starting out, it will give you more perseverance and more patience to actually be able to get across the bridge.
That's beautiful, man. You explain that. I love that. We also say marketing is just a fancy 9-letter word for test. And I think people come to us always assuming that we've got this all predetermined and all prefigured out. And we know the steps, but I can't tell you if it's going to work the first time. And if it doesn't, we need to help you implement it. And talk to the just, I really love when you really get going on the subject matter of, I've heard you talk about the valley of despair and just the power of better and not the chase for new, and just how you really have managed that in your own life and how you coach people through that.
I think I'm passionate about it because of how many mistakes I've made in my life around it. And I think it's I have a talk on my podcast called Talent Stacking. If you guys want to listen to it, alexatpodcast.com, you can talent stacking. But fundamentally, the first thing you'll need to learn is promotion to, and this is making the obvious point that you're the thing that you're actually trying to sell. If you don't know how to do the thing that you're selling, then obviously learn how to do that first. But hopefully if you're listening to this, then you have some basic skill set that you'd like to make more money from. And so then you need to learn the promotion skills, and that comes all of the marketing stuff I just went over, but then all of the sales stuff, how to do high ticket sales, how to do set and closes, there's a million things in sales. I'm not going to get into it. But the next thing after that is the character traits. And so the character traits that are associated with that are going to be, for most entrepreneurs in the beginning, is focus. Focus, right? They can't do just one thing. They're super scatterbrained. They're starters. And so the thing is that the character trait that got you to leave your job, or that is getting you to leave your job, or getting you to leave the training floor, is actually the thing that's going to sink you for every other aspect of your life after that point. And because fundamentally what you're doing is you're saying, I don't like what I'm doing, I want to do something else. But once you do the something else, you have to not do that again. And that's what's challenging, because it's counter your character. And especially once you see a little bit of success, it's, oh, me starting new things is successful. But then very quickly you get spread too thin, and then you can't win. Because ultimately you could be the number one vegan powerlifter dude. You could also be the number one female weight loss coach. There's the number of verticals that are out there is unlimited, but you just can't be all of them. And so by focusing down on one thing, it becomes way less sexy, but business is about getting better. Marketing is about new and different. And so what you need to do to market to your prospects is constantly being new, unique, and different. But what you need to do in your business is constantly just get better, right? And those incremental improvements yield disproportionate gains. And so what I mean by that is there's a million people online who sell how to make money online. There's a million people.
Yeah.
But the few who have gone all the way, who've gone even deeper and even deeper, are the ones who ascend all the way at the top. And in a real world sports example of this is, you can be really good at running, and if you want to be in the Olympics, the difference between gold and fourth place is a tenth of a second, 0.2 seconds. But the real world difference between gold and fourth place is everything. And so even though it's a very small incremental difference between those two, the real world difference is leagues apart. And so I think it's the same thing in business. Is like, we are better at making gyms money than anyone else. And because of that, we've been able to grow bigger than everyone else. Most people try and go bigger and then they get worse. The way to grow bigger is to get better, and then bigger happens naturally as an effect of being better.
Wow. Okay. This is what you told me when we spoke, and it was in context to something you said earlier on one play, one way. Yeah. And that was, and I think this is where you were telling me, this is where you receive some of the critics out there who are like, oh, Alex Hormozi has everybody do the same thing. And you have a great answer for that. I'd love for you to share that. And you share, like, you've got to make the program good enough for 80% of the people. If it's actually 100% perfect, then a minimal amount of people are going to get results, because it's not catering to the greatest amount of people. And you can quote me, fix me on it if I said that wrong. But the big thing you emphasized was your program has to get better. Yeah. Your dang program has to get better. And like, I've been spending the last couple of months, I spend 4 hours every morning just like in the modules, just unpacking the IP, just reorganizing, saying, you know, people are getting case studies to give them more examples, just making the product better. And something you said was, I don't know if you remember this, he said, your program should be so freaking good that people that shouldn't be getting results are getting results.
Yeah. It should be so powerful that you're concerned about the people you sell into it, because you feel like it's unethical for the amount of money they're making. And you'll see this as a telltale sign, because people who don't deserve to make the amount of money that they're making start making it and don't know what to do with it because they actually haven't developed the character traits and the skills in order to know how to manage it. One of my favorite, here, I'll actually show you this. I don't know if it's going to be on video, but one of my favorite magic cards, I used to be a magic card player back in the day.
Didn't know that.
A friend of mine got me this because I reference it all the time. It's called Burning Wish. And the reason it was my favorite was because the flavor text on this is she wished for a weapon, but for not the skill to wield it. And so my goal is to make a program that's a weapon.
Say that again for the slow guys in the room.
She wished for a weapon, but not for the skill to wield it. And so I want my program to be that weapon, which is, it's so powerful that like people hold it. They're like, oh my God, like this thing is, I need to level myself up to even wield this thing. And I think that comes down to what we've talked about plenty of times, which is simplicity, right? Because if you have most programs that are out there, and this is not due to malicious intent from the people who are making them. So be very clear. There are many coaches who have, they document the process that they did to become successful. And then they say, this is how you do it. And they're not doing that because they're trying to fool people. They're doing it because that's what they know. But the reality is that most of the people who come in are not them, do not have the character traits, do not have the skill sets, do not have the experiences and past beliefs to recreate the same result. And so if you could give me two doors and one of them, if I opened it, I'd be able to have a business where 90% of people achieved $100,000 a year. And then another business where 5% of people made $1 million a year. I would take the $100,000 a year every day of the week, twice on Sunday, not even have questions about that. Because it's my belief that if you give that 5% this vehicle that's making them $100,000 a year, they will naturally ascend to the next level. But if you have that next level as the only thing, then everyone else is going to fail and it will get heavy on you and you will sabotage your own results because most people are ethical, I think. On a base level, no one's trying to fool or deceive people. And so that's where you see these gurus who blow up and then crash. And it's because they choose to stop because they're like, I don't want to be in this space anymore. And it's because they're not getting the results the majority of clients who are coming in. And so the reason they have to focus on the product, in my opinion, it has downstream impacts, right? First and foremost, if the product is simpler and the product is better and has fewer choices for the person to make, they'll be more likely to be successful. And so naturally you'll get more testimonials, you get more word of mouth, you'll get more retention, all of that stuff. But the secondary effects of that is that if your team sees you focused continually on the product, their conviction in the company, their conviction in you, and their conviction in how you want to help your customers increases. So your support improves, the level of care for the customer improves, and all of that. And then the third effect is that on the sales team, they can sell with conviction because they know that the company is doing everything in their power to make their clients successful. And then that allows them to sell with a clear heart and clear eyes saying, I really can tell you that I know this is, you've got $10,000 saved up and I know this is half of everything you have, right, to get started. But I can tell you that there's no other place that you're gonna have a better chance of being successful than with us.
That's amazing.
And I really think it, I think everything comes down to conviction. Like, at the end of the day, I was coaching this. I got brought in for a consulting gig for a mortgage sales company. They wanted me to train their sales team and rewrite their script.
I thought you weren't doing those anymore.
What was that?
I thought you weren't doing those anymore.
This was 3 years. Yeah, this was 3 years ago.
Okay,
this was 3 years ago.
Got it.
And I flew in and I remember they gave me the script that they were working off of. And then I spent the whole morning rewriting the script. And then the second half of the day, I was going to drill the team and talk to them, right? And so I came in and you can imagine how this is. Who's this outside guy? And you got a team of, you know, 10 dudes are all wheeled around in wheelie chairs. They've got their phone things on their necks. And I was like, who's the guy who's causing trouble? And they told me, John. And I was like, hey, John. And they were selling leads. That's what they were selling. And I was like, John, how good are the leads? And he was like, and I was like, you're good. Thanks. I was like, I already know because you have no fucking conviction.
It's all good.
I was like, I already know that you're not convicted. And so you're not going to sell me. Let me just, like, you have, most sales guys have the basic fundamental skills of selling, but they simply don't have the belief behind it. And your words and the tonality that you use when you sell changes when you believe in what you're selling. 90% of sales is your tone. It's not the words. The words are the easy part. I can give you Chris Rock's stand-up script of getting on stage, and you can get on stage, and I can get on stage, and I'll probably bomb it. Because it's not the words, it's the delivery. Right? Are we good? Are we getting upbeat? Or am I lowering my voice so they know what I'm saying right now? It's really important. You need to pay attention. Right? Tone is everything. And the tone will naturally change based on the conviction of the person. So let me give you an example with that lead guy. And I said, for example, if these leads were so good that they really were good, would you not be right now studying for your real estate test because you want to take some of these leads so you can sell some of these houses, and your uncle is a realtor, you've got him on it. Your mom, you told her about how much money you're making. She's studying for the real estate thing so that you can give her the leads because everyone's making so much money on this. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, that's the difference of conviction. Because if it really were as good as you're saying it is, then you would be doing different things. And so I made a podcast about this, but it's like the story behind the story. So you have your script, but what's the story that's operating as the, as like the operating system in your brain about what you're talking about? Is the operating system, I'm a sales guy and I'm going to try and get this guy to say yes. You're going to close, you're going to be an average salesperson who just closes a very mediocre amount and makes 70 grand a year. You know what I mean? That's what you're going to be. If you want to be world-class at sales, first try and find a product that you can really believe in, first off. But then from there, the story that you're telling yourself is that I'm going to get on the phone with this prospect and I have to get this guy out of his own way so we can change his life. And so every time they come up with something, you're coming from this point of empathy and understanding of, I understand where you're coming from. I hear you. But I'm telling you right now that this is your shot. But like, this is it. Like, what story are you going to tell yourself in a year? You know, I'm not going to get into sales scripting, but that's the fundamental difference.
It really is. Like these lines, I'm actually a product of a lot of Grant Cardone stuff. And people say that stuff is way too hardcore for me. I'm like, I think it works well for me though, because there's bulleted questions. It's, so what do you need to know to make a decision? Like, I'm getting to the point because I'm comfortable getting to the point. So you went through our application, you're on the call now. Let's get to the, like, I don't have to spend 45 minutes digging deep into your past. I'm not a therapist. I'm like, all right, great. So what caused you to reach out right now?
Yeah.
It's just, but I'm able to ask those pointed bulleted questions because I want to find out why you're here now and what's the impact of you not having what you want. And hey, let's see if and how we can help you maybe possibly. But yeah, that takes time. And it does take a lot of, and I love to talk about this dirty reps idea, because you get to a point where I put out over 1,000 YouTube videos, I put out dozens of programs, you've been at an income level for so long, you just know you can speak from a place of conviction. So just what are some of more of your practical tips for somebody who might not have it? Hey, Alex, it's easy for you, man. You guys have been crushing it for 8 years now. Like, how, you know, we've been doing this for your whole life. Like, how do you speak with that conviction? And maybe from the, at the start, like you don't have the conviction. You're trying though, like you're mustering it up. You just speak to that. Like, but I love
talking about this.
Okay.
It's a great question. I love this question. I don't get it often, so I'm excited. You can't cheat conviction. You can't fake conviction, because conviction comes from inside. And so it's like, Alex, what's the cheat code to fooling myself? The cheat code is you don't fool yourself. You believe, right? And how do you, then the question is, how do I become a believer? How do I have faith? You have faith through walking the path. So before we sold Gym Launch, I sold my first Gym Launch program at $6,000, which is what we started at 4 years ago, whatever it was. I'd had 6 gyms of my own, number one, and I'd scaled them. Number two, I'd flown to 33 cities in 18 months and I'd launched 33 gyms, as in sat at the front desk for 21 days and filled their gym up. And so between my 6, where I was consistently doing this every single month, and the 30 plus gyms that I had personally flown out to meet the gym owner, fix their model, fix the pricing, run the ads, sell the actual people coming into the gym, because I didn't trust that they would be able to do it. From that, when I got on the phone with the first person, they're like, how do you know it's going to work? I'm like, because I've been doing it for 4 years and I've launched this many gyms. I've sold 4,000 people this one program. This is the script. This is how it works. And so they're like, how do you have so much certainty? I'm like, because I did it, right? And so it's not unreasonable for me to have my level of conviction because I did it. I was on a different podcast a year ago and they're like, yeah, I get all that stuff. But like, how do you shortcut that? I'm like, you won't. You're not going to win. And so I have a fundamental belief that the work you do to increase your conviction is the foundation of the pyramid. And the height of that pyramid is directly proportional to the width of the base. And so I don't know anyone else in the gym space, just to my knowledge, I could be wrong. I'm just like, to my knowledge, that had as many gyms as I did and did as many gym turnarounds in person. I don't even think anyone done gym turnarounds, first off. That turned around essentially almost 50 gyms personally before even thinking about selling some sort of consultative service. And so with that, I think that dug a very deep well and it built a very broad, sturdy foundation for like Why do you do it this way? Because I tried four other ways and this is the way that works.
So you're talking about competence, and confidence comes from competence, and that competence comes from a lot of time.
Volume.
And it's volume. Yeah. It's volume and reps, and it's back to better. It's not back to fancier exercises. If you want to deadlift 500, it's more weight on the more reps volume. It's just volume. Yeah. And it's not, that's not a sexy topic, but it's the consistency compounds. I like that. I think what you're basically saying is something we say to our students is they come to us and they're looking for a shortcut. I'm like, dude, you're the freaking shortcut. You're the shortcut. Like, you have to bring your experience and your testing and your effort to the table. That's the shortcut. And then you can tell us what's working, not working, and we'll keep you on the right path. But we're not steroids. Like, we can't accelerate things. That's what they're looking for, though. I'm like, there's nothing that can replace time. And I think that's a tough message for people to embrace.
I have a really good parable that I learned recently. So this was, I can't remember the guy's name, but he became the greatest swordsman in Japan. And this was before he was a great swordsman. His father was sick. He told him he was going to be the greatest swordsman in the land, but he wanted to do it before his dad died. And so he went to Banzo, I think was the guy's name, who was at the time the best swordsman in the whole land. And he says, okay, I want to be your apprentice. How long will it take me? I want to be your apprentice. How long will it take me to become a great swordsman? He says, 10 years. He's like, okay, what if I don't take weekends off, I work 12 hours a day, every day, and I go all in on doing this? And he was like, 30 years. And he was like, wait, you just told me that it's gonna take three times as long if I said I was gonna work twice as hard. And he said, only for someone who's in a hurry will it take so long. And so for the same reason that that Susie has been dieting for 15 years because she's been trying to lose 30 pounds in 30 days, she doesn't look at, well, what if I just wanted to lose 30 pounds for good and forget how long it takes? Remove time. The end of the story, he ends up going to him, and the rest of it, he does become the greatest swordsman and whatnot. But I think the moral of the story is, like, that hit me super hard, because I think for me as an entrepreneur too, it's only for someone who's in a hurry will it take so long, because that's where the entrepreneurial ADD comes from. That's where you're jumping from thing to thing because you want it. You want to be the greatest swordsman in 30 days, right? You want to lose 30 pounds in 30. It's not going to happen. And even if it does happen, it's going to be short-lived. You're going to gain it all back.
I've been spending 6 months trying to get one webinar to convert on paid traffic since February. One webinar. I do it every single Thursday from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. And it's finally now, it's almost at a point where the conversions are good enough to start scaling it. It's been 6 months. Every single week, I have four people review it. We go make some tweaks. We do it again. And it's hey, what should we do better? Last week, we had our best one. The week before, it was slump. It's practice. I think that's funny. And fitness people should get this too, because I built my whole brand off of losing weight around the half pound strategy and not losing any more weight than half a pound per week. And if you're losing more than half a pound per week, then you're going too fast. And I built the whole messaging around slow equals fast. And it's the same thing you teach with weight loss. And same thing, if you're trying to gain more than half a pound of muscle per week, you're going to be gaining more fat than muscle, and you're going to wake up one day and look like a melted candle. So
to the same degree, if you can't retain the customers you already have currently, let's say you've got 6 online clients and you're thinking about working with Vince, right? And you're like, hey man, I want to get this going because I keep losing people faster than I'm getting them. And you're like, well, we should probably fix that, because adding more is not really going to help you.
Right. You're always bringing in 6, losing 6. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't, you know what I mean? But that's where a lot of people are in the industry. And the ugly work is the boring work. So one of our core tenets is do the boring work, which is you have to confront. And I think that's the part that no one wants to do. They spend so much time not confronting, that if they took the amount of time that it takes them to delay and procrastinate and just confront it, they'd be done in a tenth the time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's huge. It's for me, a lot of people come to me and the big idea is like, hey, Vince, how did you grow your business? I said, I spent 10 years putting up 2 YouTube videos a week. I spent 10 years putting out 2 high quality videos, and the series kept getting better. My first 200 YouTube videos sucked. Go watch them. They're up there. It wasn't until I consulted with my brother, who's a videographer, and said, yeah, your videos, all this talking head. I don't know. You guys make all this money and you're so cheap on your videos. Why don't you actually create a good series? Why don't you create some good content? And I'm like, is it nobody wants to watch you talking head about 3 best exercises for legs? So I came out with Muscle Camp, and Muscle Camp reinvigorated my brand. And I came out with this Day in the Life series. And it was just, there's more thought that went into the content. And that's a tough message to embrace, because you're going to put out a lot of dirty reps, but if you put 3 to 4 years into building a YouTube channel or a podcast, you'll never struggle for leads the rest of your life. And then when you get into the paid ads, all your stuff's going to work better because people are going to see you as a celebrity. You're going to have influence. There's going to be eyes on you. And now your conversions work better as opposed to you being a complete nobody trying to run a campaign. And nobody doesn't even knows that you're that you're important. So they don't pay attention to any of the other videos you post after that.
You know, what's interesting about that, to further that point, is we did a data review of all of our clients over the last 6 months. And over 80% of the clients that came in after consuming multiple pieces of long form content. So multiple, as in they had minimum two pieces of long form content. So that'd be like a book and a 40-minute video, or a multiple, or for me, like they've listened to 10 episodes of the podcast and read an ebook that we've put out. And so like a lot of times paid ads, especially in an online environment where you have low trust. Everyone wants to throw an ad up. There are some exceptions this way I won't get into right now, but by and large, especially if you're in an expert-based business, normal people go on Amazon and read reviews before they buy stuff. And the reviews in the expert world are the value that is demonstrated beforehand, before the call. Mm-hmm. And so they get a taste and then they're like, okay, if this is the free stuff, then I want the paid stuff because this stuff's really good. And so the other mistake that I think you've probably seen too is people's free content is horrible. And so it's like I tell my marketing team this all the time. I'm like, God forbid the thing that we put out that 99% of the marketplace consumes, which is not the people who buy, is bad.
Yeah.
The thing that most people consume is the free thing. Not only a very small percentage consume the paid thing, but the vast majority consume the free thing. Wouldn't it be a horrible shame if 99% of people thought we were horrible because the thing that we gave was fluff?
Tell me what you describe as bad content, or just like what you're like, dude, there's no effort. When you look at content, what are you looking for?
Substance.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like something that is well organized, that has a clear deliverable of what I'm going to discover, or an emotion that I'm going to feel. So there's two sides to this, right? Like when there's some content pieces, I'm sure that you've made, some of my best content pieces have no tactical advice, but they're telling a story of a lesson I learned, but it's not tactical. Like that story with the swordsman, that's not tactical. Besides, don't be in a rush. There's a lesson that's in there, rather than three ways to get your YouTube videos to rank. Those are useful too, but there has to be a clear objective. If it's, I was told to make a video every day, that video is good is really bad. The flip side argument that you could probably make is that you're trying to develop your voice. You're trying to learn what to say, get comfortable on camera. So I can understand that part.
Yep.
But I'm still going to throw rocks at every one of those people for sucking if they're trying to compete against me.
The quality comes from the quantity.
Yeah. Right?
You can't be afraid of like,
yes.
Like I said, like I put out so many, like I put out like 20 videos on nutrition that was essentially polarizing advice, trying to get clicks. And I agreed with it, but it all attracted all my haters. And from those videos, though, I learned, okay, I'm not putting this crap out anymore because it didn't come from a good spirited place, even though I agreed with what I was saying. And then I quickly learned, okay, stick to the workouts, Vince. Stick to that. I try to be the super science guy, and I'm not a super science guy. I'm the no-nonsense guy.
So this is a great point. Right now, I think we're entering, or we're currently in the midst of what I would consider like the authenticity revolution. Celebrities getting taken down because what they're doing in private does not match what they do in public. You saw Rachel Hollis is getting destroyed right now because of her divorce, because she was selling relationship events and coaching and marriage coaching.
Wow.
She's getting just reamed by haters. All that someone has to do, even if this is my theory here, she could have 100% kept her business safe face if while they were struggling, she talked about it. That's it. People just don't want to be fronted. And so it's hard because you think when you're getting into it that people want to see you looking awesome, but people want to see you being human. And so it's much more, in my opinion, about saying this is the journey I'm on. I think Gary Vee nails this, right? Like his whole document, Don't Create, was very difficult for me to really understand. But rather than saying you should do XYZ, it's saying I'm doing XYZ right now. It's working. Check it out. But one is from a preacher and on the pedestal. And the other is I'm here with you as another human being I'm struggling with some stuff right now. This is what I'm working on. Here's where I'm deficient.
I built my whole damn brand around that whole idea. Like, why should I listen to Vince Del Monte? He hardly has 16-inch arms. I'm like, that's the exact, you know, good old marketing. That's the exact reason you should listen to me, because I'm on the journey with you. And they used to be 14 inches, by the way. But
love it.
Yeah. Did you know, I don't think I've told you, but my father was a pastor for 19 years. And one of the biggest things that he taught my brothers and I, and even to this day, he said, Vince, don't export if it's not working inside the home.
Oh.
And he's just so like, Vince, if it's not working inside your home for you and Flavia, and I've always wanted to do a marriage podcast for the last couple of years, but Flavia won't let me. She's like, I'm like, we can, but she's just, we're not there yet. Like, she wants it working at a level inside our own home where there's no cameras. Where, okay, now we have something to share. But, and I see both sides. I'm okay, we can put ourselves out there and be vulnerable. But I think there's certain stuff you just don't talk about on broadcast. I think you could go on the journey and share it, but there's certain subject matter. My dad just said, protect your marriage. Like, you expose yourself when you put, if you don't have something, like I'll bring my dad on my podcast to talk about marriage because they've been married for 43 years. I'm like, Dad, you come and talk about it. I don't know what I've only been married 10 years. I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm not giving any parenting advice until my kids are 45 years old. You're not going to ever get parenting advice from Vince. But what you're saying is you can't fix what you fake.
Yeah.
You can't fix what.
And that's the conviction thing. And I'm sure on some level, if you were a relationship coach and you had some degree of relationship stuff that's not working out, you feel like a fraud. Right now, if you've started and things were working well, let's say that things work great and Flavia says, let's do it. And 3 years in, you've built this whole relationship business. And then all of a sudden things are on the rocks. Do you stop the business? The real world is probably not, right? Cause it's probably the thing that puts food on the table. You got employees, there's all that stuff. But I think what gives you the release valve is just saying, guys, I'm not executing the principles that we're even teaching right now. And I'm struggling with the same thing that you guys are, but I'm telling you that when you do it, it works. Now, being consistent, we're all human. And so I think we all just need to be, but when you say that, then they love you more because they are relating to you. And then they also become so much more loyal because they're like, this guy's real. And also when you do say the good stuff, they believe it because you also say the bad stuff.
That's so good. Yeah. Hey, I got a more of a personal question for you, if you don't mind. Yeah. I want to just hear your thoughts on just completely. I heard my kids just come inside, so we probably don't have much longer here. But I just want to hear, I look up to, like, you've got a big platform, man. A lot of people look up to you. You have people's trust. And this, I want to just talk about this whole COVID thing and what's going on in the world right now. And I've got like mixed feelings about it. And I watch like big name pastors. I watch some people get a little too vocal about their platform, with their platform. Some, I feel like maybe not vocal enough. Yeah. And I'm just trying to like, and I watch some people navigating this really well. And I guess my question is, one thing I want to say before I ask you, I've discovered over this whole experience, I don't have as much influence as I thought I did. The only people that I have influence with are the people in my circle.
Yeah.
But when I post something, I joke around the weekends, we went out, I got the exemption card. I don't wear the mask and stuff. And I like to stir it up. If I'm feeling insecure about myself, I need some attention on social media. Like, but I'm just curious to know like your whole thoughts on, I know you're not a political guy in that, but like, just how do you navigate like how you want to be seen? Is there a wise way to say, just go right through it and not address it and just show up with like positivity, hope and light and just serve the people in your corner? Or do you need to say something? Do you need to stand up and say, cause I'm conflicted. I'm like, if I don't say something, then am I being inauthentic or am I being wise? I just would love to hear any thoughts on this whole subject matter.
Man.
Sorry about that. No, yeah. You didn't know this question was coming.
No, I didn't. What a layered and complex question.
Yeah,
I think there's different lenses to look at this through, right? There's like the business lens, there's the influencer lens, and then there's like the personal lens. And so from a business standpoint, I think that most of us would benefit from being more polar and talking more about the things that people disagree with. And this is something that I'm considering. I haven't pulled the trigger on it, but I'm considering talking about my political beliefs. Because 90% of my audience agrees with me. And that's because psychographically, the people who are attracted to me share the same values. And so I'm not going to lose anyone. I'm only going to reinforce the values of my community and attract more people who are like me. Kaylin Pullen, who runs Lady Boss, Yeah. She's gun tattoo on her arm, Kentucky, Jesus, and Trump. And that's what she is. And her community is millions of women who are just like her, which makes it so much easier for her to speak about the values that she has. And those people become so much more loyal and radically charged towards her cause rather than trying to be middle. And so I think it just takes a huge degree of guts and being willing to take the backlash. But I think at a certain point, once you're high enough on the pedestal, you're getting hate every day. You know what I mean? Like, we got our first death threat last year. We had security at our events and all that kind of stuff. But I think that's something that just happens when you just expose yourself to 1,000 people or 10,000 people or 100,000 people. If you figure 1% of people are just totally crazy, if you have 100,000 people, you've got 100 people who are nuts. You become elected president immediately. People are sending you death threats. They don't even know you, right? And it's because of what they believe you represent and the story that, and how it makes them feel about themselves when they look at you. And so I think that for me, my North Star, so saying that first as a caveat from a business perspective, for me, my North Star is that I talk about my values. And so people know where I stand. And it's also because I think that if I talk about my values, I'm not married to a person. Let's say I said, I'm pro-Biden or I'm pro-Trump, right? All of a sudden, everything and every decision that person makes is now, by assumption, something that I'm agreeing with. And so I think if I were trying to be a wiser version of myself, not me, but a wiser version of myself, then I would talk about the decisions that someone might make and why I agree with it because it's aligned with these values, or why I disagree with the decision because it's not aligned with these values as I perceive it with the data that I have. And I think that now everyone's going to read the headline, right? No one's going to actually read the thing, but at least if I do that, the only people who disagree with me will be people who didn't even read the whole thing or didn't even watch the whole video. But the people who did consume it and the people whose opinions I actually would care about, which are the people who actually would take the 2 seconds and actually figure it out, those are the ones that I feel like I could be authentic with because I'm 100% in line with who I am. This is what I believe. You can believe what you want to believe. And I think that being vocal about your values is a nice middle step, at least in that direction of being 100% vulnerable and exposing yourself. Because I think that when we talk about values, we have to talk about the gray. You have variety and you have consistency. You have justice and you have mercy, and both of them are ideals, but people need to know where you stand. And most people who know me know that if I said mercy and justice, where do I stand? They'd be like, you're more of a justice guy. I'm like, yeah, I'm more of a justice guy. I'm more of a, you're not the exemption. We have these rules for a reason. You know what I mean? Don't be a victim, be a victor. But I want people to know where I stand in the gray so that they know where they're at with me. And so I think that's, at least for me, how I navigate harder issues is going back to the fundamental truths and then and keeping those as a shield as I walk forward.
Yeah. No, Alex, that's great, man. No, it's really, dude, you're a smart dude, man. Tell me who's feeding you these days. And I always say there's two ways to live life. You can spend it or invest it. Where are you investing your thoughts and your time and energy? Who's I know you're in a new high level mastermind or attending something or other, but who are these guys at?
I'd say the last 6 months has been a really deep work period of time for me. I think COVID obviously launched a lot of things because we had to rapidly change. We had to adapt for our whole industry, for our business, for our clients. And I just noticed in doing that, if you listen to the podcast, it's like we've been stuck at between 30 and 40 million for the last 3 years.
And yeah, Alex, we all feel sorry for you, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just joke. I told my community I'm interviewing you today and they all already laugh. Oh, it must be tough, but I get it, man. I guess. And I said, but he's stuck. It's actually, listen to what he's saying. So there's stuff showing up there and I wouldn't want to hear what's showing up there. Sorry, keep going.
And all the points that we're making, rather than, this was a conscious, it was hard for me to even say, I was like, I'm stuck here. Because everyone was like, we made this, we made that. You know what I mean? But like, I'm stuck. And I'm currently, I believe, in the process of being unstuck. And it's been a lot of deep work. There's multiple issues. There's the tactical issues. There's the personnel issues. But I think the deepest ones are the ones that we bring upon ourselves. And for me, it's exploring how I can be more liberated in my life and how I can make decisions without fear. So for me, I think a lot of us are motivated away from pain. And I think many champions are more, and this isn't an opinion. This is actually in research. They did a huge interview of Olympic gold medalists, and champions hate losing more than they like winning. They're relieved when they're not happy. They're just very happy they didn't lose. And so I think that for me in business, it's been very much that same degree. And when I started, I didn't have the approval of my dad, and that meant everything to me. And so I was so desperately trying to get out of the pain of disapproval that I would do anything to win. And now that we're here and my dad does approve of what's happened, there's one element of it is the love conditional that I have to like peel apart. And so I actually told my dad, I was like, I want you to know that my biggest fear in life is that you stop loving me, or that you won't respect me, because if I lose everything tomorrow in some lawsuit or who knows, that all of a sudden I won't be worthy anymore, that you won't. He's like, I would never, blah, blah, blah. And then there's element of, so he said that, and I can either choose to believe him or I can choose not to believe him. So if I'm going to say it, cool, I'm going to choose to believe him, I still didn't feel better. And so then I was like, okay, then it's not him, it's me. And so then I realized that it wasn't about seeking approval from my father, because I had 4 years when I had my gyms, my dad didn't approve. He thought I was wasting my life doing this gym thing. Because then I realized that once I had, you know, achieved a certain level of success, my fear was that I would not respect myself if I failed. And that is my deep fear. So it wasn't about my dad, it was about me. And I think for me and a lot of men, especially, like most men value respect more than love. When surveyed, they say, would you rather be respected and unloved in the world? So everyone respects you, but no one loves you. Or would you rather be completely loved, but no one respects you? For me, the second I can literally have a visceral response to being loved and completely disrespected, I would take respect all day long without even questioning. I would rather have respect. And so I think for me, it's unrequited self-love. It's unrequited self-respect of me being conditional with what I think about myself. And so that's what I've had to peel back, because there are decisions that so when you ask what I'm feeding myself with, there's a book right now that is probably the best book that I've read in such a long time. And it was recommended by Brooke Castillo. I don't know if she is. She's like the number one life coach on iTunes. She was at this event. She's also now a very close friend of ours. And brilliant businesswoman, total side note, kills it. Brooke Castillo, C-A-S-T-I-L, two L's, O. We were there and we said, if one of the things we did when we were there is if you had one book that's really influenced you a ton, which would it be? Which was cool, because I got to see the books of everybody who was at this event. And the total event had 8 people and it was doing $500 million a year in revenue. So it was pretty cool. And she said this book, The Last Word on Power. And I'm halfway through the book right now. And I know when I'm reading books, whether they're going to become mainstays in my life. And for me, a mainstay is a book that I'll read 3, 4, 5, 8, 10, 15 times, because I'm more of a believer in reading one thing many times than many things one time. Because I think if I read something once, I don't even remember anything. So If I really want to consume the information and have the information become imprinted on me, then I need to repetition, right? Volume. I need to wash myself in it over and over again. And it's funny because, especially because you're in the Christian world, like people treat the Bible that way. They read the Bible over and over again, but they don't think that they should apply that to other skills that they're trying to work on. Why would you not read the best book on marketing over and over again rather than try and find, it's if you have an amazing book on marketing, just keep, like, if you knew everything in that one book, do you think you'd be successful? Yes. Then don't read another book. Just read more of that book. Read it more times until you get it. And that's one of the beliefs. And so anyways, The Last Word on Power, the very first page in the book says, this is not for people who are looking to be successful. This is for people who've already won their game and want to get to the next level. So it was like, it automatically disqualified 99% of people who read the book. But what she talks about in this book is so unbelievably profound that we have these, she calls them winning strategies, but we have the imprints of this playbook that we've done over and over again in our life that become a part of how we see the world, what we listen for, the actions we take, and what we want to do as a result with our context, right? And when we're, you know, younger, we have some level of success doing something. And then we just get better at executing that play. And so for me, it's, I listen for what's the bottom line, what's the big point. My action that I take is I try and take charge and take massive action and take lots of action steps so that I can be respected and avoid disgrace. That's my MO. But in order for me to get to the next thing, it's not about me taking charge, about me letting go. Because at a certain point, the winning game that you play won't get you to the next level. And you have to unlearn the thing that's been your paradigm for how you see the world. Because fundamentally, all humans exist in the human paradigm, which is that the world is one way, it should be another way, and this gap is why I'm dissatisfied. And we will never rectify that. Because I can tell you, now that we're about to cross 100 million, the dissatisfaction doesn't change. There are some things that I'm happy with, there's some things I'm not happy with, and I'll bet you if when we hit 1 billion, there'll be some things I'm happy with and some things I'm not happy with, and that becomes a constant. And so not to get too heady on this, but walking through this experience of figuring out that the end is already fixed, there will be aspects I'm satisfied and dissatisfied with, it relinquishes me from the fear of having something not happen that I don't want, because it's guaranteed. And so then it frees me up to make some of the bolder decisions that I would want to make in our business and in my life that'll ultimately, I think, get us to the next level. And so that's the spiritual path I think that I'm walking down. And I think that the reason I love entrepreneurship so much is because I think it's the best vehicle for personal development, because it's the only one that gives you a scorecard every day for how well you're doing. And so the money is irrelevant. Like, we've taken a tremendous amount of money out of the business. Like, we're 100% done. But I still feel so far from where I'd like to be, should, am, reality, the gap. I still feel so far away from where I am, but that vehicle forces me to confront the issues that I might not ever have confronted otherwise.
Yeah, dude, I think you just hit the crescendo there. I don't know if we can go higher than that. I'm not going to try and go over the top there, but you got that one. Good work. Took us home strong there. I've learned that from when the pastor gets to the top of his note, you just wind the music down.
Just wrap it up.
send everybody home. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.
Same time, same place.
Yeah, we'll try and do it better next week. Yeah, but this week, I think we got it. Alex, that was amazing, man. Thank you so much. Where can people follow what you're doing, and how can we get plugged into your world more?
If you want to watch me get punched in the face a whole bunch of times by life and tell you the many stories and struggles along the way to hopefully doing $1 billion in revenue, or having our clients do that through our systems, you can go to alexspodcast.com. It'll take you to the podcast. We're actually in the midst of rebranding it. So it says Gym Secrets now, but it'll soon be something else. But it'll take you there either way.
So. That's awesome, man. Hey, what I got to ask, we got 2 minutes here. I wanted to create a new YouTube series. It's like road to our first $1 million month. It's like, but then maybe my top competitor will know that we're not at $1 million a month yet. And what would you say to that? What a great show to invite people to come along and see what we're trying to do to get this new milestone. And hey, watch the journey. But I did it in fitness. I invited people to watch me get it. But you just put something out there, and I'm scared to do that. What do you think of that?
I have two things. One is, from a business perspective, I think a lot of people won't resonate with that.
Okay.
Because they're already, what you're doing right now is already inconceivable. And so going from where you're at to $1 million a month is probably only important to you. What I think they would, if you were to do that, in my opinion, I would be talking about the parables, the struggles, the beliefs that I've had to overcome, and the stories that I now tell myself in order to achieve that. And the $1 million a month becomes a byproduct, but not the goal. The goal is the learning, the lessons, and the beliefs that we have to change along the way. And that's something that everyone can resonate with. The second point would be that who cares what your competitor thinks? Like, they don't even exist.
But I just wanted to,
they don't even exist. They only exist in our minds. Like, it doesn't, the ocean is so big. It's so big. There's 500,000 personal trainers in the world. Sorry, just in the United States.
Yeah.
If you have 10,000 of them, you still don't even have 1% or whatever, 2%. But it's so inconsequential. We just live in this. We live in this funnel hacker world of information marketing that makes it feel small. But the reality is that the vast majority of trainers have never even opted into anything. The vast majority of trainers don't even know this world exists.
That's so true.
And so it's like the pool is so big. We had this, my sales guy be like, we're starting this. I'm like, guys, like, how many people you get on the phone with know who we are? And they're like, most people don't. And I'm like, which means they don't know who they are either. It doesn't matter. We have 3,500 gyms that we have sold. And if you figure we close 1 out of 4 sales calls, we've been on the phone with 15,000 or 14,000 gym owners. 14,000. They're not, like, there's 50,000. If you look at Google, they say 50,000. My guess is probably a little higher than that. Gyms. We've been on the phone with 25% of the marketplace. But still, we get on the phone every day with people who've never heard of us.
Oh, I love that, man. It's plenty, 8 billion people in the world, plenty for everybody. Oh man, Alex, this was a ride, man. Thank you so much. Awesome. Hey, let's stay in touch, man. And wishing you all the best with everything. Thank you for all your help. I've been getting up at 4 since you told me about that, like legit 3:55, except Sundays. And I got 3 kids, so I don't want to hear it.
No, you're doing great, man. How's the 4 a.m. helping? Is it good? You like it?
It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. I do 90 minutes of deep work. I work on my product. Then what's my second 90 minute block? I'm freaking ghosting here. Yeah, it's typically working on my product. Deep, I call it money later tasks. stuff that's going to produce money. And it's got to, my webinar, I'm either working on, so it's stuff that's going to produce money for me in 30 plus days from now.
A framework that I've used that's been helpful for me is delineating between inputs and assets. And so it's just different words for the same concept, but inputs my team makes, because that's, once I've built the assets, I built the machine, the thing, the email sequences, the funnel, the webinar, the sales tools, whatever, the ebook, the whatever, right? The things that live on, the assets, then all that has to be added are inputs. The machine's built, we have a car, we need to add gas, we need to add a driver, we need to add demand, which is advertising, and we need to add salespeople. Those are the inputs into the machine, and on the output is sales. And so sometimes thinking about it like that is, I'm gonna build assets, or am I coaching people on how to build inputs? And you can build assets around inputs. So you can make checklists on how to make inputs. You know what I mean? So it's just, for me, it's helped just delineate those two things.
I think that's our next podcast.
Inputs and assets.
Yeah. No, it's good. I know where you're going, I think, with that. But yeah, that's freaking awesome, man. Hey, keep up the great work, man. Keep being an inspiration. I love just your realness and your rawness on your show. Just keep it up. It's an incredible resource for anybody not listening. Tune into Alex's podcast. It's just so much wisdom and insight and honesty and just freaking gems, to be honest. It's like
failures and getting punched in the face a lot,
but like freaking tactical things you can apply right away. And you inspired me to simplify my podcast just to make it much more real, raw, off the cuff, and just being who I am. And it's, yeah, I've been getting a lot more positive feedback as well, so thank you for that. Okay, brother, hopefully we'll get that workout in sometime in 2021 when the $100 million mastermind resumes, and Dan invites you to come to an event whenever it may be, and still want to get that lift in with you. I'm sure it'll happen next year.
Dude, definitely. We'll throw some iron around.
Awesome, man. All right.
Absolute honor. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care, bro. Ciao.